podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Tour Live. It's Neil Atkinson with John Gibbons, Adam Smith and Bill Blundell to work through Liverpool's pre-season friendly against Leipzig. It says the title of this show is Liverpool Leather Leipzig. John,
yeah, I like it.
Do you like it?
Yeah, absolutely. How's that? Consider yourselves leathered.
Would you say stick that in your pipe and smoke it?
Yeah, or in your kind of Red Bull.
Yeah, stick it in your energy drink and drink it.
Excellent stuff. That's the spirit, Phil. That's what we're going to talk about. Liverpool leathering Leipzig. We've got Darwin Nunez as well. We've got your comments coming through on the chat later on this Tour Live, John. What are the wonderful inserts you've got for us?
So we've got James Higgins, who came in to see us a few weeks ago to talk about a football agency they set up with a little bit of a difference. It's focusing on mental health and player well-being and things like that. Really interesting chat with James, who is a Red. Who came in on the day Mo Salah signed a new contract as well, so that was interesting for him. How quickly he became the least important person happening. But he was fine with it. He was made up. He's a Red. And then also I spoke to Fran from Red Drum Club, who are a band we've supported for a while, and we've had him before. They're doing a big US tour, so they've done some gigs in America, but they're doing a big tour in September and October. So talking about the excitement of going to conquer America with the guitar.
Conquering America sounds absolutely phenomenal.
Well, at least having a nice time.
Well, no, I think conquering, I think that there needs to be some element of conquer. Yeah. If you go to America, you've got to have conquered it. That's the way in which it works. The other thing that we've got coming up as well in part four of Tour Live, or part two if you're listening to it as live, is a conversation around the members' ticket sales, the way in which that's changed. We've got Adam and Phil in for that, as they have relatively differing views, although I suspect it will remain quite friendly, given everything as it were. No, Adam, are we saying no?
No, definitely not. I've already sent a horse's head round to his house just when he goes outside.
Adam's been drinking vodka since 7 a.m.
He's getting himself leery.
Yeah, in preparation for this, Hightown's never seen so many horses' heads as there is currently knocking around outside Phil's gaff. That is to come, but we will start off talking about Liverpool leathering Leipzig all the way through on this one. The obvious thing to talk about, Adam, is the fellow we paid a lot of money for to score a lot of goals turns up last night, plays one half of football and scores a lot of goals. He gets four. He could have had more. The second and third are such brilliant finishes.
We did a show a couple of weeks ago, Neil, where one of the questions, it might have been Tour Live, I can't remember, one of the others, but anyway, a question was about who you wanted to see perform well in pre-season, and my answer was Nunez, because what I want more than anything else is everybody kind of going, oh, they've sold Mane, he's going to be important, or they brought somebody, you know, else in, and then he scores loads of goals and they sort of go, nah, what are we going to do now, because we can't mock him for it. And then we've sort of seen that play out in the ludicrous highlight reels from other pre-seasons that opposition fans have made, kind of going, oh my god, they've spent £100 million, no we haven't, on this fella, blah blah, all that sort of stuff. And then now he's gone and he looked sharp. I think everybody with half a brain was watching them and get those reels and going, why have you put together these reels of him looking really sharp but not quite finding the back of the net? It's a bit mad that you think that's something to mock us with. And then this time he's just gone, aye, and I can also hit the back of the net as well, you know, so I'll score one. And everyone goes, oh good, he scored, and I scored two, and you go, yeah, brilliant. No, they scored four, and everyone else going, oh come on now, that's just, we wanted more highlight reels of him missing stuff. So it's just lovely. And as you say, they were really well taken. They were all different types of goals, obviously, because when the first one's a penalty, you're a bit like, oh good, you know, he scored a penalty. It also looked like he might not score it at one point. It was really close, but he did, and then he's obviously just scored the other three totally different ways, completely different styles of goals, and just now he's added that looking really sharp, he's added goals to that, which is exciting.
John, for me, what grabbed me about it was he's a number nine who theoretically should be on the periphery of the action given the way in which he plays, and then you couldn't keep him out the action. And that was the most exciting thing about the whole half of football. Now, we won't always play sides that are as accommodating as Leipzig, because they were trying to go through their preseason. They're trying to play with their principles. They were high line, high press at times. But the key thing was we just constantly had him involved, and therefore had him involved around the penalty area. He could get six. Genuinely, he's not far away from being able to get six. And to me, that was one of the things that was the most exciting part. Obviously, that comes secondary to the fact that he still scored four, and four is a lot. We have a song about someone scoring four.
And he didn't do one off, did he? Yeah. So unlucky, Rushy. But I think You're right, and I think he's always looking to be dangerous, isn't he? And a lot of our forwards are sort of similar to that, but he's a very different one again. And the amount of times that he was stood in a similar to position to how he gets his third one, you know, is, you know, gets you excited for how many goals he could get, really, because, you know, I think, you know, Firmino and Jota, when they sort of play that role, doing it in a slightly different way and contribute so much and have been brilliant players for Liverpool. But having that natural striker's instinct, and I'm with Adam, I thought his movement was excellent, particularly in that first preseason game where people were sort of trying to write him off. And his teammates are getting to know him, but you can see that understanding growing. And the more that understanding grows, the more he's naturally sort of in the game, really, because the passes become quicker into him. You know, it becomes more and more like instinct, really. I'll get the ball and I know what type of run that the forward's going to make. So the learning about each other already. And I thought that's what you saw. You know, I didn't think he played necessarily any better than he had done in the first couple of games. I think, you know, you're right to say the opposition, you know, the way they played sort of helped us a little bit in terms of, you know, the space was there, but also his teammates are just learning about him. They learn about him in training, they learn about him in this game. So, you know, a couple of times we nearly scored that third goal again, and he was there and he was, you know, had a bit of a smile on his face as if to say, you know, that this is coming, really. You know, the second one is excellent, and you can see him scoring plenty like that as well. But that sort of striker's finish for the third one, he nearly, you know, you were talking about him cutting having six, you know, that nearly happened sort of a couple of more times again, and it was sort of good defending why it didn't, really. So, yeah, we got to see it. We got to see what it looks like. We got to see when it works, and it very much worked last night.
The really interesting thing, Phil, about the whole friendly is getting to see what it looks like in a number of different ways for a couple of different players. We'll come on to talk about others apart from Darwin over the course of this segment of the show, but getting to see what it looks like with Darwin. There was little things that you got to see, I thought, around them going long, looking to hit him, and then Salah going and playing nine. So it goes into Salah's area, but Salah and him almost flipped positions as Liverpool looked to go more direct, and Salah then almost looking to get beyond in one sense. Then you saw what it looks like after Salah goes off, if Elliot plays on that side, and then Nunez really is a pure nine who's looking to make all this sort of movement. And it makes it easier, I think, for other players then to play in the more sort of Salah, in inverted commas, or Mane-ish roles as more traditional footballers, because he's doing all of that. You could see how it looked at link-ups from midfield, where the space is, and I thought you could see that in both halves. I thought Firmino was really bright in the first half as well. It was much more so than the friendlies that we saw in Bangkok and Singapore, where it was three lots of 30 for the most part. I thought you really got to see where the tweaks are beginning to be for Liverpool, and especially where Darwin's concerned.
Yeah, the closer it gets to the actual first game of the season, the more you want to see that kind of thing, don't you? Like the first friendly is basically it's a waste of everyone's time, really, from a watching point of view, because all it is getting lads 30 minutes in the legs, getting them a bit of football, and you see as it weans, as time goes on, they go from 30 to 45, and some of them obviously play 60 last night. I think the actual football looked different to me, specifically in the second half, in which I'm glad about, because I don't think you can just play the same football all the time. And that's one of the things I think Darwin Nunez brings you. He's just very different to what we had. I think you got to see it. That, all right, they play with different players, but him and Firmino are just very different, aren't they? In fact, they didn't play with different players. Nunez had 15 minutes with the other two, didn't he? Yep. So they do the same thing very, very differently. And one thing Nunez does that Firmino doesn't is he enables you to make the pitch a bit bigger, because that ball over the top that's there for him, it just isn't there for Firmino, because he's not really got the pace and the power and the sort of ability to hold the ball up. Not hold the ball up, but sort of get in behind and move a defender back 10 yards. You know, he wants interfeit, he wants to drop off, he wants to get everyone involved, which is great, but there becomes a point where the football match is just happening in a really small part of the pitch. Now, with Nunez, he's not going to be able to do that anywhere near as well as Firmino is, but he's going to do something different. I mean, you saw the start of that last night. I mean, there was a brief period when you did actually see him on the left, which was quite funny, because I think me and Jake did the gutter with Rob yesterday. We both said that the thing about the left thing was a complete blag and you just never see it, and proved us wrong in about, what, 9 hours, something like that. So that was also good to see, and that there's a little bit of flexibility and fluidity about what they're doing when they're on the pitch. And it was weird that the second half was almost a bit more interesting than the first half, given that that team in the first half is probably 10 of the 11 that are going to play against Fulham, I would think, and the one that isn't was the goalkeeper. So, you would like to be going, oh, this first half was amazing, but you got more the second half when you saw Elliot, who was a bit further forward. You saw Carvalho, who was great. You saw Nunes, who was obviously scoring four goals and being great. And obviously
four goals.
Well, yeah. How many?
Four, mate.
Four. Right, good. Thank you. And then there was stuff like Bayetic.
It's the same number as Everton conceded against Minnesota, Phil. If you're looking for the trigger,
yeah,
in your head.
That's a good reminder that I remember. That's probably the same amount of points Everton have at Christmas as well.
There was
so much going on in the second half, wasn't there? It was. I almost enjoy that part of pre-season more when you get to watch the players that the slightly new and young, and that they're going to offer a little bit more. And it was interesting. I thought there were like five, six really good performances second half.
There were five or six critical performances second half, John. There was Bajetic, who comes in and plays number six, looked pretty impressive. I thought it could be possibly one of those play games where he comes in and plays number six, but he doesn't do much because everyone plays around him, but they don't. They play through him a fair bit of the time as well. I thought Henderson played well in there in the second half. I think it's interesting that Carvalho and Elliot, both of whom we sort of see as potentially being midfielders for Liverpool this season, both play in the wide areas ahead of the midfield. I thought Jones did well. It was Shimikas, your friend, put some good balls in, repeatedly digs the ball out. You know, repeatedly there was bits and pieces in there where I thought, yeah, these all look good. It was a real... There is the idea, I think, every pre-season or the pre-season friend that really gets you excited for the season. And I think this was the one for me there. And it isn't just because the main fella scores four goals. It was just sort of looking at it all going, yeah, I want to watch these play football in the flesh. I want to see some of this.
Yeah, it's a real realisation or reminder, should I say, of just how many excellent footballers there are at this football club. And like Phil, I would expect something very close to that first half team against Fulham. You know, you could, you know, maybe if Darwin keeps scoring four goals in a game, then he might get a look in. But you know, you'd expect you won't be shocked if you had that 10, you know, out there. But then in that second 11, there's so many exciting players. There's so many young players putting their hands up, or you know, established players. You know, the club captain, of course, is in that second half team and plays well. Like you say, Chimikas comes in left hand side, and there's no drop in quality whatsoever. In fact, if anything, his delivery into the box was sort of even better in this game. And yeah, Bajetic was just phenomenal. And he's an interesting young lad in that he was the last one, I think, before Brexit that they managed to sort of sneak in. Liverpool can't make signings like that anymore, which is another reason.
Not just Liverpool.
No. Yeah, that's the rule.
Feels harsh, but the Tories are in, so we could have got a cop for it.
The section they don't talk about in the Northern Ireland Protocol.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where are we drawing borders here? I mean, you can make arguments for the rights and wrongs of poaching young talent from the top academies around Europe, of course. But Liverpool stuck a couple in just before. I think he was the very last one, and he came in as a centre-half, and they've been working on converting him into a six. But considering he was a converted centre-half playing six, he was popping up in eight a lot, wasn't he? He was really going on midfield, you say. Watch a bit of this. I'll play 10, mate. And so he was pressing high. He was a confident boy. And like you said, Neil, so, you know, once the players sort of realised, you know, how confident he was and just how good he was, really. I mean, I'm sure they've been realising in training. They were giving him a lot of the ball and he was starting a lot of attacks. He was spraying passes both sides. And, you know, it wasn't his toughest challenge defensively, I would say, by that stage. So that's something, you know, we need to, you know, see more evidence was in the future. But in terms of on the ball and just how big he is as well, you know, I got really excited there. I thought we might have another one here. We might have another first-team player that we weren't talking about at all 2 weeks ago.
What I thought was quite interesting, sorry, is that he's the only kid who played, really, wasn't he?
Because
I don't think you can really class Carvalho and Elliot as kids whilst they're only 19.
Yeah.
Now it feels like he was the only non-first team squad member.
Yeah, the only one he expected to play under 23s next season.
Yeah, was the only one. He's the only one who got all the way through, and you think he's done enough to play Salzburg again. At the complete other end of the scale, Phil, I thought that Milner was ridiculous at right back. Like, he shouldn't be that good at right back. It was a tremendous performance from him in terms of just turning up and just doing all the right back for 45 minutes.
Do you think he was thinking, if I'm that good at this, they'll realise I'm still really good and I can play in midfield instead?
Yeah, because it's just tackling and passing, isn't it?
Honestly, if I can play here, I can play in midfield. Honestly, it'll be fine. It'll be absolutely fine. Yeah, he's just the model professional, isn't he? He's great. And
But it's interesting, Phil, on that, just genuinely on that, it's interesting that they put him in there and they still wanted to use Gomez left-hand side at centre-half and they didn't try and do anything with Phillips or do anything anywhere else. It was, I do wonder whether or not for the start of the campaign, Milner might actually be the substitute right-back, as odd as that is, until Ramsey settles, gets over the injury, proves his fitness. I do wonder whether or not you may occasionally see Milner come on and do some right-back.
Yeah, I think when you obviously see the subs, you obviously see the team, you see the subs, and you know that there's going to be a large number of changes in the second half, whether it's happening at half time or 60 or whatever, you know it's going to happen. And I was sort of looking at it thinking, who's the right back here? And the thing I hadn't considered Bečetić as playing in the middle of midfield, so I hadn't even considered that it might be Milner, because it just looked really obviously like the midfield second half would be Milner, Henderson and Curtis Jones.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, will it be Ian Bayer? Is it going to be Seth Vandenberg? Is there going to be a thing where Phillips plays centre back and Joe Gomez plays right back? And I wasn't expecting Milner to play right back. So that sort of, it feels like it tells you a story about what they are thinking of at the start of the season. And I suppose the thing with the right back is that we've only got one midweek game, haven't we, before September. So it's not quite as important in the early stages.
Yeah, it's just Andy Castle one, yeah.
Yeah, so you can probably get starts out of Trent. And obviously with the five subs, it might be a situation where you can have three games, one after the hour, and you've brought him off, and he's basically had 90 minutes taken out of his legs just by coming off three times.
Yeah, and there's every chance that we see that. Adam, it's good to be excited, and it's good that, you know, when you make these big signings, you get the moment of being able to become really excited about it without, you know, idiots having to do compilations or anything like that. It is the idea of a direction of travel, I think, and that's the main thing we can all take from the game. There's a direction of travel now for the rest of this pre-season from a Liverpool point of view. We're going to get to see certain players. Carvalho's been mentioned, Elliott's been mentioned, Bačetić has been mentioned, but the big one obviously will be and has to be Darwin in amongst all of this. And I think that's now, you know, when the game's coming up against Salzburg, he's the one you want to see. There's a comment in here that someone wants us to start him alongside Salah and Diaz, which I think is interesting. Come the start of the campaign and maybe see if you can unleash them against City. I think Darwin could well make Diaz's life a little bit easier as well, because Diaz still doesn't look to me quite as Jota / Mane coming off the left around the idea of getting himself to sort of 20 goals all comps. Now I want him to prove me wrong, obviously, but if Darwin's in there and he's offering that as well, then it'll give Diaz a little bit more time to get himself settled. And also Darwin does love to pull left too. You know, being able to be excited about this lad's good.
It is. And I think, you know, I'm not as kind of into transfers as Rob Gutman is, right?
How could you be?
Who is, obviously. But that's why I don't win awards. So I think the thing, but obviously, once they've signed, like, I'm not bothered about, I'm like the reverse of a teenage boy. I'm not bothered about the chase. Like, once we've got the sign in, I want to know what's going to happen. You know, that's what I'm excited by. What they're going to do on the pitch. That's what I want to see. And I want to see them perform well, right? And there's nothing I want more than to see a player who's sticking the ball in the back of the net, in his case, that's performing really well in the case of Carvalho, that's doing the things that you kind of want them to do. And I think that is really what he's shown with these, you know, four goals against a decent team. Let's not, you know, like
Champions League team.
Exactly. You know, we've got to put all the usual caveats around it, in that it's pre-season, et cetera, et cetera. But they're still a good team, and they're still doing, you know, they're still trying to get up to fitness and everything else. They don't want to be conceding four to one player. So, you know, and in the space of one half. So it's not, what we want to see is them performing on the pitch. And but by doing that, and by, as you said before, working in a way that interacting really well with Salah and, you know, moving position, making Phil look an idiot, all those things that we all love, that you get to really enjoy
very much this, so yeah,
you know, seeing what they're bringing to the table and what they're gonna bring to the table moving forward, and that's something to go, brilliant, yeah. You know, yeah, of course we want to see them against City, because there's nothing we want to do more this season than give City a bloody nose before you know, a ball has been kicked in a kind of a serious game. So if we could go to there and he scored two against their defense or whatever, it gives us a slight mental edge, which is daft because it's only the Community Shield, but it's the kind of thing you want to see to get ready for the forthcoming season.
Absolutely. Absolutely exciting stuff indeed. Salzburg to come. We hot mic'd the game against Leipzig last night, and we'll be hot mic'ing the game against Salzburg. And we're threatening to hot mic the charity shield, aren't we? Community shield.
Yeah. All being well with a good headwind.
Yeah, with a good headwind, if we can make the technology work, we're threatening to do that, and we will go from there. So that is to come. All of that on the hot mic with the Anfield wrap to come with those friendlies, which should be absolutely fascinating. At the minute, the manager is working them into the ground. It is fair to say. We can relax, though. We can enjoy ourselves. If you listen to this as a podcast coming up now, you've got a couple of inserts, Red Rum Club, and I've forgotten James's name again.
James.
That's the spirit. Excellent stuff again. I've forgotten James's name. James. Perhaps his surname.
I've got Richards in me, but that's someone else. He's from football.
Here he is anyway. He's talking to John, and then there's Red Rum Club, and then we'll be back to talk about member sales tickets and maybe a little bit of transfers as James Pearce has laughed the Mateus Nunez story out of court. Back in a second or two.
It's John Gibbons for Tour Life. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by James Higgins. He's an Anfield Wrap listener, Liverpool fan, but has also set up a football agency with a bit of a difference. So we're going to hear a little bit more about that and the reasons for setting up. But first of all, James, thanks for coming in to see us.
Thanks very much for having me. Really appreciate it.
We just had a beer to warm up. very important to warm up the vocal cords. But you're also telling me a little bit about the reasons for setting this football agency up. And that's because of a lot of problems that footballers, even at the very highest level, get into after they've stopped playing.
Yeah, so footballers obviously sometimes can get a bad rap, no pun intended. But, you know, the stats behind it were kind of quite shocking when I started researching into this during lockdown. And you've got 40% of footballers that are within 2 years of finishing the game are bankrupt. 50% are suffering serious mental health challenges. And I just started to think, well, you know, is there something that I can do in this? My background is in education and creating programs, and thought possibly I can step in here and make a bit of a difference with the way that I act with athletes.
The statistics are crazy, aren't they? And I know football isn't alone in this. We were just talking earlier about similar stats I've seen for American football and, you know, for a lot of different sports where people, you know, either sort of living in the moment and thinking, oh, this is going to sort of carry on, or aren't being given, I guess, the skills or the information to plan for the rainy day.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get our heads around because the numbers are so different to what we're used to. But I suppose if anyone can identify with kind of moving their spending up as their income goes up and you kind of still haven't got too much left at the end of the month, no matter what as you go up, I guess footballers to some degree act the same, but their career is cut short at 30, 35, and actually a third of players finish before that. They don't choose when their career ends. That might be injury, it might be a coach's decision. And so but then their income level drops off to basically zero. And I suppose one of the issues that I see in that is what are clubs doing when they're kind of filtering players through the academy system, 1% of which will actually make some money out of the game, 99% won't. And, you know, there was a player who was on a charity program that I built, which was my previous life. The last 10 years of mine have been in education. And she was choosing between Liverpool and Everton, actually. She's a very good goalkeeper. But they wouldn't let her study A-levels. So instead, she chose to go with Fleetwood Town because they would let her study A-levels. And she was a bright girl. She'll be making it to Birmingham Uni later this year, actually. And I suppose players are funneled down similar pathways. It might be leisure and sports science as a BTEC or something like that. And actually, these are low-paying careers if players don't make it. Or even if they do, you know, what skill set are we setting them up for after their career? So that's where I'm coming in, trying to sort of work with players much earlier on in their career and building towards that post-career thing.
I mean, there's the money aspect, but there's also, I know I've heard footballers talk about, you know, replacing that buzz and you know, getting into maybe problems with gambling and things like that when you're looking for the thing that's replacing, you know, what you've missed, which is playing football, the thrill of winning, scoring a goal, even the dressing room humour. And I think that's where the mental health aspect comes into it, isn't it? Because, you know, like you said before, there's very few footballers who get to go out on a high, you get to walk out, you get to say bye-bye, you know, that's me, you know, stroll off the pitch for, you know, and into the sunset. For most footballers, actually, it's someone else or something else that's making that decision for you. And then suddenly, you've not just got the loss of income, but the loss of everything you knew and everything you love.
Yeah, I mean, maybe except for Divock Origi, he's going off into the sunset in Italy, isn't he?
Yeah, he gets the beautiful moment.
Yeah, and rightly so. But yeah, no, you're right. And a huge aspect of that is the identity that a player puts behind being a footballer. Unlike any of us, what's the identity that we associate with is kind of what you do. And when they've been doing that since they were sort of 5 years old, but haven't sort of thought about what their identity is maybe outside of football or after the career finishes, when most of us are just getting started with our career, that's sort of what we're looking to start building on and working on early in the career. And there's evidence actually to suggest that players can perform better, be in teams longer, increase the longevity of their career when they're kind of planning around their career as well. There's something about that sort of loss that they might experience when their career is over, that if they're working to set aside that loss, there are benefits to that in the kind of mental health aspect.
What's the reaction you've had sort of from within the game and from people within football? Because I guess it's sometimes hard when you've got one agency saying, oh, we'll get you a great boot deal and we'll make you loads of money. Then these are other guys who are like, you know, we're going to look after your long-term mental health. It's not quite as sexy, is it? That's fair.
It's not as sexy, yeah. And, you know, notice you pull my website up and, you know, there's something about kind of, so we are actually sort of terming kind of things around mental strength. And so, but I think this is something that we can all really take into our lives, is sort of a proactive nature in terms of how we kind of deal with mental health. And so things like looking at your values, looking at your identity and building that proactively rather than reactively. And I think a lot of players, as they move towards the end of their career, are reacting rather than being proactive. But you are right, and we're not going to be for everyone, and there's a reason that we're sort of, the intention really is to, one of the strap lines is to kind of work with 100 only. I don't, you know, there are a lot of young players that are obviously influenced by peers, influenced by kind of what they see in the game already. You speak to other agents and, you know, mainly their selling line is, well, we represent Jadon Sancho, or we represent, you know, Marcus Rashford, come with us. And so I think there are some families and some players that can listen to what you're saying, and if they need to be ready to sort of meet you halfway as well, to sort of think about the things that they want to focus on outside of the game and understand that maybe this isn't forever. And obviously you don't want to detract from like the excitement that a young player is feeling about the career. And, you know, if you start to get into things, you start to look at the numbers, actually, you know, the Forbes list of top 10, top 50 players, the richest players in the world, a lot of the money actually is not being made in the sport. It's being made outside of the sport. So take last year's earnings. Conor McGregor, the MMA fighter, was top with 110 million, actually.
He's got whiskey, hasn't he?
100 million of it was through his business. 10 million was from fighting. And so, you know, there is another element to what we're doing here that's looking at the post-career, that's saying, look, well, actually, what we want to do is think about how you might create a business, how you might create a charity. And there is that giving back aspect that I want to kind of look at with players as well. And lots, don't get me wrong, lots of players give back. But in terms of kind of, we don't just want them giving the money. We want them to be involved in the process of running their charity, or involved in the process of running their business and developing those skills, so that when that day comes, when the career finishes, it's not, wow, what am I going to do when I wake up tomorrow? Because there's so much discipline that's kind of imposed on the players. You know, we go here now, you eat this, you drink that, and we're leaving here now. Whereas as soon as that finishes, and this is the thing that, you know, a lot of ex-players talk about, is there's that loss of identity, but there's that loss of routine. And what you mentioned as well, John, is the kind of loss of camaraderie as well.
And being so well looked after, that you know, I've heard players say I didn't even know how to pay a bill. Do you know what I mean? I've never cooked for myself before and things like that. And it's, I guess it's life skills as well for the future.
100%. And, you know, and part of that, what we do when we start working with a player or a coach, there are some managers that are working with us, is kind of look at those values and the things that they cherish or pay attention to outside of football as well. But it doesn't have to be just the business. It's, well, what are your relationships like with your family? Do you have a hobby? You know, what are you outside of a footballer? And that can bring quite a lot of stress relief as well from a player who, you know, if we can get them involved in something else, maybe it stops them looking at all those comments on Instagram. You know, Curtis Jones had massive issues with that kind of earlier in the year, and Neco Williams. And, you know, so it's can we do something proactive and positive away from the game as well?
Well, good luck with it. Thanks for coming in, James. The website which they clocked me pull up is harbingerfootball.com. If people want to have a little look, there might be some young players listening to this who are interested. But yeah, come in and see us again. Tell us now how you're getting on.
John, thanks so much.
And it's John Gibbons for Tour Live. I'm joined over Zoom by an old friend. It's Fran from Red Run Club, who's been on a couple of times, but here to talk about some really exciting stuff you've got planned in autumn or fall, if you want to use the correct term. Because you're off to the States, mate. I know you guys have done some shows out there before, but this is a big tour, which must be really exciting.
Yeah, it's we went out in March. But we had a support band in March, and we only had a few shows on the East Coast and West Coast. Stopped in Austin, Texas for a bit, but this one's it's a big boy tour on a big tour bus, and it's our name at the top of the poster. It's our shows.
It's exciting though, isn't it? Like, you know, when you start a band and, you know, you pick up a guitar and you guys, you know, an old mates, which is something that's dead cool. You know, there's pictures of you playing gigs together when you're teenagers in pubs and stuff. And when you do that, then you have a pint after and you dream about world domination and stuff. Like, a US tour is, especially for Scousers, for some reason, I don't know whether it's because we're a port city or what, but you say like, oh, imagine going over to America to do shows. It's real, like, that I was going to say bucket list, but you wouldn't even put it on a bucket list. It's more like dream, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not like, it's a bucket list suggests it's like quite easily achievable. Just go out there and play some shows. But I think it is the port city thing. I think it's like we look that way, and you know, we're very heavily influenced by our music. And we got a lot of that going back to the Fab Four. We got a lot of their influences were because we're a port, and it was the first place all the American bands or American records landed. So
yeah,
it's always sort of, you know, when you go down to the Mersey, you go down to the seafront or Crosby Beach, where we are, you look across there and it is a little bit, right, I don't want to get too romantic or anything about it, but it is a little bit of a, it always just feels a little bit out of reach. But yeah, we're going back to do it now, and it's to do with my mates who we've just all worked for years and years to get to a point where it's just feasible. It doesn't even matter. We don't even have to take over. Do you know what I mean? We don't have to break America. We just go and have a good time and hopefully pick up some fans while we're out there. Like.
How's your music gone down in America so far? Because obviously the internet makes the world a smaller place, so I'm sure that people have discovered you. Hopefully we've put people onto you guys in the past as well when we've done stuff, and then there's obviously the shows as well. So have you found, you know, there's an appetite out there, you know, for the music and for the sound that you guys have?
Definitely, you know, the biggest thing about it was there was lots of expats. There was lots of sort of, especially on the East Coast, there was a lot of people who like sort of had heard our music and keep in touch with the sort of with the British tunes. So there was people waiting for us in New York and LA. Them shows were really well received. But then when we were there as well, it was like we just seemed to pick people up as we go along. We just make our shows a party, and especially Austin, Texas. We played 5 shows in Austin, Texas in a week, and people were at the first one, come to the second one, and the third one, and the fourth one, and the fifth one. There was people taking off work to come to the shows, because I don't know whether it was like the sort of trumpet in the band that sort of appealed to them, or the fact that we just made it a party, which we do at the live shows. So we were well received. You know, there was a bit of a fan base waiting for us, but then when we got there last time, it just grew and grew and grew. So yeah, we're not getting our hopes up yet for the next tour, but you know, hopefully it should be better again.
As a Chubber player, Fran, I can confirm it's never fucking us who are getting people down. I promise you that. I promise you that. It's the vibe, I'm sure. It's the songwriting, and it's that energetic front man. Yeah, I was coming on to that energetic, enigmatic front man, all that. So the show is then, it starts in September. It starts in Silver Spring. I do not know where that is. MD, help me out. There we are. But then you go to New York. There you've got the show. Yeah, at the Mercury Lounge, you know, onto Philadelphia, Chicago, Nashville, Dallas, Austin, Denver, Salt Lake City, Seattle, some fucking cool cities here, by the way. Vancouver, Victoria. I've been to Victoria, it's nice. And then into California, Berkeley, West Hollywood, which just sounds cool. The Peppermint Club, I've heard of that. That's into October. So finishing up October the 12th. So it's nicely spaced out. It's over a few weeks. Some great shows, some great venues, and yeah, if you can get a few down there, it promises to be really special.
Yeah, it's we're sort of seeing it all this time. We got the East Coast last time, and then we ended up in LA, and we got a little bit of a taste of Austin. But now, as I say, we're going up to Salt Lake City that we were chatting about, and you know, we're probably gonna see things we've never seen before.
I think it takes a lot to shock you boys, honest with you.
A lot, yeah.
When you're out there as well, you know, you guys work so hard, and it's something I really admire about you guys. You know, you're super talented, and I love the bond, you know, between you on stage, but also like you grafters, you've from day one treated it like a job, and I'm sure when you're out there, you'll be looking to do other stuff as well. And I know people listen to this who are involved in music and radio and media out there, like, Give you a shout is what I would say. Like, you'd be up for doing sort of interviews and stuff like that, and anything like that.
Yeah, well, last time we were in New York for the Liverpool, the Champions League games. I can't remember which one it was, but we were in New York and we had the day off. So we got in touch at Carragher's Bar and said, you know, we'll come down. We've got an acoustic guitar. We play some Liverpool songs, you know, at half time and after the game and all that. And they treated us dead well. They gave us a few pints of Guinness on the house because we'd done it. So yeah, we're always up for anything like that, anything to promote to ourselves, and you know, we will come along and bring the party.
So there's Liverpool games taking place, Joe, and all that. So yeah, if you want to invite the boys down, I'm sure they'd love to sort of come down, watch the events, and see what you guys are up to. Maybe bring some guitars, and then go and see them properly when they're sort of, you know, fully plugged in and unleashed. Is everyone just buzzing from it, mate? Because you know, you've had a brilliant few years, and it feels like, you know, there's so many things, you know, like headline shows, sellout shows at big venues, you know, in Liverpool, you know, the touring that you've done in the UK, you know, it feels like it's building and building, building all the time, but this must feel like, you know, the step, and I'm sure all the lads are bouncing into Prachy at the moment.
Yeah, it is. It feels like it's a bit of a snowball sort of in the UK, especially, you know, our shows are getting bigger and festivals, appearances and stuff, and you know, selling out Liverpool shows with 4,000 people. It's very, very sort of like humbling. You can't really take it in. But then when we go to America, it's like starting again. So it's sort of like, it's a breath of fresh air a little bit. It is a little bit daunting thinking, oh God, we've got to go there, and no one, who knows us in Salt Lake City? Who knows us in Dallas? You know what I mean? Possibly nobody, but that's a good thing. You know, it's a new challenge for us, something we haven't really experienced over the last 12 months. We might have to go and play a show to 20 people. So, you know, that, and it wasn't too long ago that we were doing that in the UK, but it feels good to go out there. It feels like we're not resting on our laurels and just going, oh yeah, we're big time over here now, which we're not. but like going over there, it really humbling, and it's just an experience as well. If you get 20 people to the show, then great, 20 people are new fans.
And 20 people will have a brilliant time. You finish off the year, two shows at the Olympia. I've not spoken to you, I don't think, since Mountford Hall. That was good, wasn't it? We had a good time.
Oh, yeah. Wow, yeah, special. It was the first place I ever went to a gig, that place, the university. And it was just like a bucket list thing for me, just personally. Just like, oh yeah, I remember being there and being, I think it was the White Stripes, Friendly Fires, Florence and the Machine, and Las Vegas. And I stood and watched band after band after band.
Yeah, the old Enemy Tours.
The Enemy Tour, yeah, that's what it was. And I just stood and watched, and I was just like, "That, I just want to do that." And that room felt like massive. It felt massive. You know what I mean? There's just over 1,000 people in there. It felt huge. And then we done it, and it was just it was real special time. I remember taking me in ear monitor out on almost every song, just so I could hear everyone sing back. They sang every word, and you looked down, and there was, there'd be like a gang of strangers, but then also you'd see a face that you recognised, and that's sort of, it's a bit nerve-wracking, but also very like it makes you sentimental a little bit. You couldn't, you know what I mean? You could get caught up in that thing and be like, oh God, I owed all these people all this time and effort. They spent money on me, and friends and family there. They didn't realise. I don't think I'll ever be able to tell them how much it meant to us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a class experience. That was up on the balcony because, you know, I'm old now, but watching down, but just seeing the carnage down there and people just having a brilliant time, and you guys, you know, buzzing off, it was great. But Olympia could be even better. It's another great venue. You're doing Friday the 25th of November, Saturday the 26th, two nights during the World Cup. So no excuses, no footy to distract everyone. Should be. I guess you know, really looking forward. A lot to come before then, but really looking forward to those as well.
Yeah, that's the again, that venue is, it's got a little bit more history, hasn't it? You know, my dad always tells me about the Grafton and stuff like that. So being able to go up there and play that one is special. It's just like it's a bit of a legendary venue. It's iconic. I think I think it's going to be special. Three tiers of seats, so it's gonna be something different for us, having to look up and see people actually above us rather than like a flat thing. And you know, the decor in the place, it's just gonna be I don't want to look that for, that's the light at the end of the tunnel. I need to get back from America first.
And just to finish off, mate, in terms of new music, I mean, there's two albums there for people to sort of listen to if they haven't, you know, aren't on to you yet or have just heard little bits. But you know, I'm sure you're working on sort of new stuff as well. What's the plan around releases?
There's a bit of a plan, but we're sort of like very busy in the meantime. There might be some things coming soon, but there won't be another album just quite yet. There's stuff written, but we might just like throw one out just for the sake of it, so people don't get bored of us.
I'm sure that couldn't possibly happen. Do check out Redbone Club, Our Stronger. They're my wife's favourite band, genuinely. She buys the tickets. The only one I don't have to drag her to. So there you are. So yeah, my wife's favourite band, genuinely, Redbone Club. And she's indoctrinating our children into them at shower time as well. But Tom, man, thanks for coming on. I would encourage everyone to get down to shows if you can, or if not, just get onto them on Spotify and you won't regret it. But nice to speak to you, fan. Nice to catch up, mate.
2023, Andy, whatever you are, we're back on live as we work this sort of stuff out. Don't forget 2023, John. It's next year and the time that the break comes within this show. It's a pleasure. Thank you very much to anyone who came to see us in Bangkok and Singapore. I'll say it one last time. And London the week before that. Excellent stuff. Really good to see absolutely everybody throughout all of those engagements and bits and pieces. Download the app if you haven't done so already. Brilliant post-match stuff last night after the game against Leipzig. And we are just gearing up. We're just getting minutes in our legs. Imagine what we're capable of come the first game of the season against Fulham. It's what it's all about at this stage. Just trying to see where you're up to, John. How are you feeling about things? Do you think you're about 70% at the minute?
75, I would say, Neil. I was surprised myself last night. I was sharper than I thought.
Excellent stuff.
Me and Darwin outperforming expectations.
At this stage, yeah. We've all got to get ourselves, got to find our sea legs again for what will be a phenomenal campaign to come. Download the app. You can use the tokens on there. Listen to last night's stuff or save those tokens. Cherish them. Use them at a later date and instead enjoy the free stuff such as Tour Live going into the rest of the season. I said a couple of weeks back and I will continue to say it. By the time we get to the start of the campaign, we will be setting this show at a specific time. I am sort of conscious that I might miss the first one because I'm doing an event in London with Phil Thompson at the King's Arms pub in Fulham. If you want to come down to that, that'd be absolutely phenomenal. So I'm speaking to Phil Thompson there on the Friday before the game against Fulham. And we're going to try and do both the Pink, the post-match audio show, and the post-match video from Fulham after the first game of the season, to which means I also ask this, any spares? Moving ourselves along then to talk about on spares, on tickets. Liverpool have changed, John, the way in which the system's working for members this coming into this season around the credits. It's something that we're in a number of WhatsApp groups and there's been a number of exchanges about it. I said this would make a good show. It's a good discussion. I think And I felt for a while, I think the Liverpool membership schemes, it's a difficult thing. A lot of people who have access to season tickets or are season ticket holders didn't like last season when for finals that members who've been to every home game had the same chance of tickets as season ticket holders did who hadn't been to any of the aways when it came to the finals. I was sort of all right with it because the members scheme has to have value for members. I think that's an important principle and it's something that I think matters massively. If you're going to charge people for membership, you've got to be able to add as many sort of ancillary benefits as humanly possible because people are paying a fair bit of money for membership and tickets are still remain difficult to come by. All of this is an access question. This season, though, there is the problem of what's happening as creditor moving as we're beginning to use stuff off the back of phones. First and foremost, I want to sort of frame this as it is a difficult conversation and I think that there's going to be stages towards changing who is in the ground, why they're in the ground, where different phases of this are up to. I'm not saying it's easy, but simultaneously, I don't like to see members be undermined.
No, but I don't think they necessarily are by this, and other people might sort of disagree. But I think what they're trying to find a solution to is what is the fairest way, and what is the fairest way of rewarding loyalty, but also encouraging people or feeling people are able to get tickets for games. And it's a very difficult situation. You have a number of season ticket holders, which is obviously, you know, set in stone and doesn't look like it's sort of gonna move. And then you have these extra tickets that are for sale and how you sell them and how you reward loyalty, but also how you try and make it, you know, you don't want to create another closed shop. Like season tickets is a bit of a closed shop.
It's a massive closed shop.
Yeah, let's be honest. Away tickets are a closed shop.
Even bigger closed shop.
Even bigger one. And so, although they're easy to transfer, obviously, because they tend to be paper. But then if members just becomes another sort of one, then what do the football club do in terms of, you know, how does LFC hashtag LFC family work if it's a family you can't join? And that's also what it feels like. And as you say, Neil, they sell these memberships. So people go, great, I bought a membership. How do I get buy tickets? And you're like, well, you can't, to be honest with you. Or it's very, very difficult. And so it is hard. I understand what they've done with the what they've tried to do with the membership, with the idea of, well, let's actually give the credit to the person who's going to the game rather than the person who just happens to have been successful in a random ballot, which is what some of them are, or also, you know, as like this morning, joined the queue and got a better queue position. If that's the only thing you've done and nothing else, then I understand why someone would, including the Liverpool Football Club, would make the argument that actually, you know, the person, let's give the credit to the person who's ultimately paid for the ticket and eventually and sort of go to the game. I get that. The problem is, and it's something that I know Adam is going to come on to talk about, is that there's having a rule and it's sort of making sense, and then there's how it works in practice. And I think that's where, you know, you start to see problems and it starts to fall down and you start to see, you know, little bits around, well, actually, you know, they've tried to create a fairer system now, but is it actually fair? You know, we're still living with COVID, whether people like it or not, and we're still living in the reality of COVID still existing, but also the knock-on effects financially and to sort of everyone at the moment, really. We can't, and I felt like last year sort of catered for that, and then this year we've got, oh yeah, that's sort of all gone now. And so that's sort of a thing. Yeah, but we caveat all that with it is really, really difficult. And I'm in a nice position where I've got a season ticket and I've got about 30 in away credits, which means I can go to most, but not quite Fulham yet. But I think, you know, so I'm one of the ones who gets to sit a little bit pretty, and I'm always conscious of my, you know, privilege, you know, in these chats. And I always try and listen to as many different people as possible. And already have, you know, from being on Twitter and forums and stuff, I've sort of, and listening to the people who are going to talk now when I shut up, you know, realise sort of other things and how it is more complicated. And I was dead hard.
Adam, talk about other things and how it is more complicated.
Look, I think the first thing to say is we all, I think, and anybody with a sensible head appreciates that it's difficult, right? There's no easy answer, obviously, because if there was, we'd all be, you know, as John says, we'd all be sitting pretty. And, you know, we also have to acknowledge that Liverpool could create a billion seat stadium and there'd be somebody moaning that they're too high up. Like there will always be complaints, right? That's, we have to acknowledge that. We have to accept that. And that's totally fair. What I don't really understand at the moment is how the system they've created is fair to members, right? That's my biggest thing, because I could legitimately follow all of the rules that Liverpool have put in place, go to 19 home games in the forthcoming season and get no credits for it. Zero credits. So next season, when they're saying, right, these ones are for people who've got 13 credits and you're guaranteed a ticket. And I'm going, well, I went to all 19 home games. You know I went to all 19 home games.
You've got a record of it from my phone.
But exactly. It's on my ticket. It's not on anybody else. It's on my fan card or my whatever they call it. But I've got no credits according to you because I've bought them from a season ticket holder. Now, I understand, I'm a little bit like opposing counsel. Phil's going to come and say to you that they can't give you season ticket holders credits because, you know, like you'd end up in a situation where you've got 29,000 people with members tickets saying, well, I've got 19 credits, and you've also got all of the season ticket holders going, I've got that many credits, and the ground's not big enough to cope with everybody. And I get that, I understand it, but it's not fair to season to members. That's the, like, where's the fairness in that? And I also don't really understand what they're doing it, like why they're doing it. Like, I feel like it's a little bit to do with touts maybe, but the touts will just do what they always do. They'll find a way around it. That, like, what happens in, you know, what happened in the ground when you had physical cards was the touts would give somebody a card, they'd use it to get in, and then the tout would go up and collect it from them once they were inside the ground. I saw it time and time again on the Kop. Well, now they'll just be going around and collecting smartphones. You'll have touts with 10 smartphones in the pockets or whatever, and the club won't really be able to do anything about it because how do you do it? And so, unless they start getting to the point where they're saying your photo ID has to be on your fan card, which might be where they go, but everybody will go, absolutely not, that's ridiculous. So yes, it's really complicated, but members are paying money for something that's basically impossible to get anything from. This morning, when those load of tickets went on, I logged in. I was 59,000th in the queue. What is the point in that? Like, I'm not 59,000th. It's all just a bit mad. And I know, by the way, or at least I've been told that I could get a membership that I don't have to pay for that would still let me apply to get the tickets and all this sort of stuff. But then I feel a little bit like, well, look, I've got no problem paying. I don't mind paying, and you get a little bottle and stuff and a little badge from the club.
Maybe a mug
for the
costly to post though mugs, as we know.
Ain't that the truth? Yeah. My payment is getting the postage sorted. So I don't mind doing it, but I've literally not got a ticket now for the forthcoming first half of the campaign or whatever it is. I had one last season. That obviously is counted for nothing. I knew it was going to count for nothing anyway. But the other thing that I'll just say is, and because John mentioned COVID before, and I think it's really important to sort of touch on this. If I had got a ticket, right, through my membership, and I got COVID, the socially responsible thing would be to say, I'm going to give somebody else my ticket. Because if I don't go, if I go, I might give somebody else COVID. But if I don't go, I'm not getting the credit for that ticket that I've bought. So I'm going to have to go to the ground with COVID or let somebody else take my phone or whatever, right? Which is basically defeats the point of them asking me to be the person that goes in the first place. So people are not going to make socially responsible choices because they don't have the ability to say, it's all right, I won't lose this credit. But instead, if I buy a credit from the club that comes from a season ticket holder, I go to the game on my own card, do not get a credit. So the only way I can get a credit is by doing it through the members sale that there were 59,000 people in front of me for about 25 tickets. It's just madness. And I don't understand who it's fair to, other Phil. Than season ticket holders who are all delighted with the whole situation.
Phil.
So the fairness thing is a fair point. It's just a slight problem with the transferring of a season ticket to a member, because members have been going, or non-members have been going, other people's season tickets since like forever. Like, that's just something that's always happened, and no one's ever got a credit for it. So it's not like this is a new thing. No one's ever gone, well, I use this season ticket, here's season ticket, here's season ticket, and now I've got 10 credits. It's not like it's a new thing that they're suddenly penalising someone for. You just don't know who the season ticket is if you buy the thing off the club. So it's not necessarily anything new. It's not something that they've gone, right, we need to stop this from happening because it was happening without reward anyway.
But you've never lost credit to either, though, Phil.
That is also fair, but this is a sort of slight flaw of the credit system. And this is also where the credit system will start to get ironed out and become fairer, because the credit system ultimately has got ridiculous. It came in, I reckon it came in about 20 years ago first with away tickets, didn't it? It was about 2003, 2004, and it sort of built from there. And it built from there basically when people realised that you got an Istanbul ticket with 3 or 4 credits.
Yeah.
And then
it went down to 4.
People were like, hang on. Now, if you remember, like, Liverpool versus Monaco and Liverpool versus Deportivo La Coruña that season, there were 10,000-15,000 empty seats inside Anfield.
Yeah.
And that just wouldn't happen now. So they had to obviously do something to fill those seats. And what they did to fill those seats was say, right, well, we have this credit system, and people got wise to it and went, well, if I want to go to that semi-final, I've got to go to these group games now. And what that's done is, I mean, even third-round League Cup games, they're full all the time, full. So in that respect, it has worked. What it has done is that it also means that people for a long time have been using these credits to not actually go to the match. And they've been going, oh, yeah, you can have this ticket, you can have this ticket. We've thought everyone who has credits has done it. It's not like a criticism, it's just the way it works, isn't it? You know, you have a ticket, you can't go, you give it to somebody else. Now, that's a bit of a ridiculous situation. There were people ultimately in Paris who didn't go to a Champions League game all season and went to the final.
Can I put as a point of order here?
Yes,
sure. Because I need to understand from either of you, if you buy the ticket and you don't go the ground, do you lose the credit? Just to be clear for me and for listeners.
One of the reasons for that, by the way, is the sheer number of empty seats there are in the grounds. You know, the night Liverpool play Barcelona, do you know how many unused tickets there were at the ground?
Go on.
1,000. There are 1,000 seats just empty that somebody else could have had. Now, that's not a situation that's benefiting anyone. There's 1,000 people there who could have experienced one of the greatest nights ever, but couldn't just because the ticket wasn't there.
Yeah.
Because if you sent the ticket back, you did actually lose the credit, I think, in that kind of situation, if you give the ticket back. So those people would have disqualified themselves for final tickets.
I don't understand how that's going to be different, though. So if this situation was in place at the time and I had a ticket and then I got ill, I'm still not going. So it's still not. There's still not be anybody in my seat.
No, but so you could return. Like, but you would theoretically return the ticket to the club now because you've got no reward. You're just basically paying £50 for an empty seat. What's the point of that?
Whereas in old times,
you could have paid £50 and you gained the credit. So there's no motivation to get the ticket.
Yeah, sure.
But
at the same time, if I've got ill, if I've fallen ill or whatever on the day, like say I've got flu or I've, you know, DMV or whatever, I'm not going to be going, oh, I better jump on and sell me tickets to the club. That's going to be the last thing on my mind. You know, there's still going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of empty seats for certain games because people just can't go or they give it to somebody else who gets stuck in traffic or any number of things that won't change because of this, but I'll have lost a credit.
Yeah, there will. So if I buy a ticket, we'll minimise this because people will eventually just lose all that. Like, there's some people, there are season ticket holders, there are members who are basically transferring every single ticket every week, which isn't right. Absolutely. As you as a member, like, there's a member gets 19 credits, can go to Manchester United and Everton at home, sell the other 17, and that's that. That's, you know, the other, someone else goes to 17, they get nothing out of it. Now, how is this right? This is a system that needs fixing.
The situation is still the same, though. But you know, if I was buying off a season ticket holder, and again, I do appreciate it's difficult to figure out how to give a season ticket holders because they don't have credits, obviously. But how to give the credit for going to the game to somebody? But it is just a daft system whereby if I buy a ticket, can't go to sell it to somebody else, I lose the credit. If I buy a ticket from a season ticket holder, I don't get a credit. Basically, I can't get a credit.
And the season
unless
ticket holder doesn't
be...
lose the credit either. Whatever.
The season ticket holder doesn't lose the credit, because they're a season ticket holder and they won't, they, there's no way for them to lose a credit in the current system. So all that happens is members lose and lose. And unless you happen to be the person that's in the queue in the first, basically, let's be honest, 20,000 people who log on to the system to go to a match, you're not getting a credit. Because everybody, all the other season tickets, the people who go, who are the first 20,000, But, you know, sorry, I'll tell a slight lie. It's not about a queue at that stage. You register your interest and then the club draws out how many people are going to go to whatever games. Mm. So there will be some people that will have registered their interest for all, I think, as somebody who had no credits to their name, I think there were 9 games I could register my interest for.
Was it 10?
I could say it's 10. So,
oh, 9, because you wouldn't have had the 4+ for Man City. So, yes,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. So, there was somebody who will have got 9 tickets there, right? Somebody will have got from the ballot drawn 9 tickets. That's possible.
Mm. It was a billion to 1, though.
You know, it would have been loads, but it's possible. I got no tickets. So there isn't, like, as far as we're aware, the club hasn't explained how and why the draw works, how it's fair, how the people who've got no credits whatsoever, how it's all shared out between them. We don't know. All I know is whatever happens, I lose out.
The season ticket points, I think, Phil, is the bit where this gets, well, it is complicated, full stop, or where it gets more complicated. So, for instance, I'm quite open about the fact that the ticket that I go the game on, which is close to you, isn't in my name, it's through someone else. I tend to go to the vast majority of games in that seat, although it was a bit weird last year at times because tickets were moving around a little bit easier. But on the whole, in a normal season, I go to the vast majority of games in and around that seat and then go from there. And that's being passed along to me on a very regular basis, it's worth saying. But we've got an arrangement, and as far as I'm concerned, morally to me, it's all absolutely above board. And I'd be livid if, for instance, the person, I'm not going to name who it is, but if they began to be threatened with losing their season ticket because they're not taking it up. But the flip side of this is, and he'd be livid as well. But this is back to an access question, in that he's got that ticket, and part of what he's done is he's sort of passed it along to me, and I'm there all the time. And that's why this is really, really hard. Because someone's made the point before, as Adam, as you were speaking, sorry, when you were talking about, you know, if people can't go, what happens? What's the ramification of it moving along? And they were saying, well, that doesn't happen to season ticket holders. And that's where this does become complicated and does become hard, I think it's fair to say, because there are people who, the very thing that you described, there are some season ticket holders, not many, but there will be some season ticket holders who are quite relaxed about the idea of, well, I'll go to Man United, I'll go to Everton, I might do Chelsea, and I'll shift the rest on. And as this currently is, that's not being addressed. I wonder about all of this, Phil, and I don't know how you feel, but I think that this is Liverpool creating a road through the next 5 years, and this is the first step.
100%, that's exactly what it is.
But at the minute, I can understand Adam's point of view of, so it's us who get shafted first. The ones who are already pretty shafted by a lot of this in the first place, we get shafted again. That's the way this works. That's the priority, is it, here? Yeah. And that is, you know, they've not stripped the hard plaster off first, not least because the hard plaster possibly involves someone like me going berserk because it made my life a lot harder as well. Just sort of know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, they know people share season tickets, and they are, by all accounts, they're okay with the concept of people sharing season tickets. That's not something that they are going to clamp down on or have any plans to. What their issue would be is if someone's using the ticket twice a season, leaving it empty or passing it on. That is something that they, I think, over time will look at trying to move away from. There's another comment there, and I'd forgotten about this, that they released when they released all the updated information, this is exactly the comment. 53% of members' tickets, that's absolutely spot on. It's not just about people getting ill. That's what is it? I think it's 12,000 tickets a game. So that's what? How many thousand tickets is that? That's like 120,000 tickets that are getting transferred over the course of a season from people who bought them from the club to somebody else. And whilst what you say about...
Just to jump in, Phil, apparently that's overall. There were certain tickets or certain types of tickets that was nearer 70 or 80%.
Yeah, absolutely. And whilst there's a thing about that being, some of this being unfair on members, those 53% of tickets, which is what, over 100,000 tickets, are transferred to people that people know. Now, me and you, John, were both for various reasons, both ways, we were sorting tickets out of quite a few people last season just because there were a lot of spares from people we know. And that was, when you think about it, it's nice to be able to help someone out for a ticket, but it's a ridiculous situation when someone is able to get a ticket because they know someone who knows someone who knows someone. That isn't how it should work, really, and that is unfair on a lot of members. You know, you look at
the stuff, but it's also the case with season tickets as well.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think you either need to go all or nothing, and there's an argument that you shouldn't be able to transfer your ticket at all. And it's just
on
going
that point as well. The 53% point, I'd love to know what the percentage is of season tickets that get transferred to other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd be amazed if it's not higher, because there are so many people in the situation similar to Neil's of saying, you know, you've basically got my season ticket. To all intents and purposes, that season ticket's yours. I know that there are so few people that I know that have got a season ticket in their own name, but I know loads of people who've got a season ticket. Mm. So that sort of thing happens all the time as well. And, you know, I think it's really... As I say, it's not perfect, but there's so many things. The other big thing that I just wanted to bring up is the fact that one of the things the club's done is do this friends and family thing now. So you've got to be on somebody's friends and family list to be able to send the ticket, to be able to get a ticket off them, right? You've got to be on that. And that list is closing by the start of the season. Right,
so yeah, thought that, Neil. August,
I'm on top. I'm off next week, John. I'm basically devoting a day to it. Go ahead.
but that's what it is, right? So you've got to be on somebody's friends and family list in order to be able to get a ticket from them, and that list is closing at the start of the season. So what's going to end up happening is that what you're talking about, Phil, of the closed shop of, you know, oh well, it's great to be able to sort somebody. So that's still going to happen, because you've got to be on. So random people are not going to be able to get any tickets. It's only going to be people who already know somebody who can sort them out with a ticket. So it doesn't solve anything on that front. And yeah, absolutely, maybe the club is on the road to doing this further down the line.
It does solve some things, because it means you can't sell a ticket to a random person that you don't know, who basically has the privilege of getting that ticket because they know you. That ticket then, if you're in a position where you're giving someone a ticket for Newcastle at home on the 31st of August that you don't know now, that ticket should be going back to the club, if we're being perfectly honest. And then someone buys it off the club and is also able to get the credit, by the way.
Now, that's going to be so few cases. That's the point, isn't it? It's so few cases that that's the case. That's going to be the thing.
People they didn't know last season. So why is that going to suddenly change? And the only people that they know that need the ticket are going to be people that they know.
I've no idea what you said. You said that they know a lot there. Look, will it solve that a slight degree? Yes, it will. But the majority of people will sort them out. So all that's happening is people are panicking now and going, I need to put anybody I've ever met on my friends and family list. So that's what most people are doing now, is panicking and going, I'm going to add as many friends and family as I possibly can. So it's and it'll be like a friend to a friend. And I think I understand the system correctly, that if somebody sent me a ticket, I could send it on to somebody else that's on my friends and family list. So that person me the friends and family that I was on the friends and family list for would still be selling it to somebody they've never met before. It's just that I'll be sending it on because they were on my friends and family list. So the system's still the same. It just fucks members over. It's just bonkers.
I think it's three times. I think you're allowed to pass one ticket on. And I think that's
I was going to say
direction.
Four, but yeah.
It's sort of that number. It is difficult. I know we keep sort of saying that. I think it is coming for season ticket holders, is what I would say. I would imagine. I think they'll sort of get there. They'll get to the point where they'll be looking at season tickets and people who are in the situation are just not going to games at all. And it'll be adjusted how they tackle that, if they do an amnesty and say, right, okay, well, you've got one opportunity to get this ticket into the name of the person who's going, and then after that, you know, it's sort of gone. That's something that might happen. I think what they're trying to do is actually increase access rather than restrict it, really. And I think they're trying to get to a situation where they want to be able to, people to be able to say it, you know, they want to be selling more tickets, I think, and not a greater number of tickets, because there's only so many tickets at a stadium. What I mean is by the fact that, you know, instead of, you know, this idea of, well, it's my ticket and I'll give it to who, sort of whoever I want once I've bought it, and I'll keep that credit. This is actually, you know, the club are in a situation where they're able to say, well, look, we can control, you know, how and credits and how many go to people with zero credits and how many people go to 30. And I think they just like more of that. And I think what they are trying to do is make what they get there is going to be fairer. It's just they're going to go into a situation where inevitably some people are going to get pissed off because any change does that.
So philosophically, the argument becomes abolish season tickets.
It can be.
Get in!
It can be. They never will.
No. I'm sorry if I upset people there.
No, you haven't
trigger warnings.
Me.
Not you. I'm not worried about you.
There's an argument. What I would say is, who's doing the flags?
No, exactly. This is where the whole thing sort of stems from and sort of moves itself along. I'm with you 100%. It is, and this is why it's philosophically, and I do mean philosophically, it's such a strong, such a difficult conversation, is that if you follow it all the way through to the end, that becomes not a valid endpoint, because I disagree with it, but the philosophical endpoint is the idea that everyone's got their own membership that attached. You know, you can even game it out and say, hypothetically, all existing season ticket holders start with 19 credits from whatever season you abolish season tickets, in inverted commas. They've got to go on, they've got to buy tickets on a case-by-case basis. They've got their 19 credits and they go from there, and they've got to make it happen. I'm not arguing for that. But my point is more that if we go on as you approach that path, the end point of that path is this. In the same way that, for instance, I always remember a remark that McKenna told me once when he was talking to Ian Eyre around ticket prices. And he said to Ian Eyre, all right, why don't... McKenna's argument was to lower ticket prices. But he walked into the meeting, he said to Ian Eyre, all right, let's make Liverpool Man United 200 quid a ticket. And Ian Eyre said, well, I'm not going to do that. And Jay said, right, so we agree in principle then that we agree that ticket prices should be capped. And all we're arguing about is where the cap is now. Philosophically, we therefore, because, and I agree with you on the flags, the banners, and certain aspects of the club and the way in which people view it, this is about where the line's drawn. And I think what's difficult is that there's some people who currently feel as though the line is drawn in a way that undermines them. And there's other people, and it does tend to be, you know, in this instance, we've mentioned away tickets, season ticket holders who aren't really impacted by that line. And then when this conversation happens, they're a bit like, I'll tell you what, this is an interesting one, isn't it? Let it all crack on over here. And I think that, and I'm pleased we've done this show, and I'm pleased we've done it that way. But I think that is hard, isn't it, John? And I acknowledge, and in amongst all this, I really do acknowledge why it's hard for Liverpool. But at some point, someone's got to tear off a plaster that will be quite painful. Yeah. And at the minute, it feels like the painful plasters aren't the ones that get torn off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and look, you know, Adam talked about touts before, and this is, you know, they don't really say why they do stuff. And I've said this to people at Liverpool Football Club. I've always said, like, when you're talking about what you're going to do, you should say why you're doing it, really. And they don't, because, you know, why would you listen to me? But I think, you know, we were left to sort of, you know, fill in the blanks ourselves a little bit, really.
We'd ask Liverpool if someone wants to come on here, by the way.
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
you
did.
You took the time to do that.
They didn't, which we didn't say no. Yeah, they're busy.
They've got a lot on.
And so I did invite someone from Liverpool, not to speak to Adam, by the way, Christ. I wouldn't put that on them. To speak privately to nice me with my nuance.
nuance John, they call him.
what was I saying? Yeah, so we just assume that this is a thing to tackle touts, and this is where we always come back to. So when a system is brought into place that makes, like Adam, makes it life worse for you, and then you go on certain ticketing websites that are advertising close to 1,000 tickets on sale for Liverpool Crystal Palace, starting at £175. I understand why people go, well, hang on, the touts seem to be fucking fine here. Do you know what I mean? So you've done this thing, you've brought it in, which is making my life worse, and the touts are literally laughing at you. They're selling the tickets at open sites. It's like selling guns online that they're doing, basically, aren't they?
Immediately as well, by the way. It was immediate. That happened. Like, basically, immediately after the sale, people went, great, I've got me 9 tickets, on they go to the site. Just one thing, going back onto what you're saying about the season ticket thing, Neil, is that one of my kind of issues is, if they did to season ticket holders what they're doing to members now, there would be protests that would make the European Super League look like a fun day out that are on the streets by most people. And the vast majority of people, and this isn't a sly dig at Phil or anything like that, because I've already said it to him, if nothing else, but the vast majority of people, exactly, I'm not being sly about it. The vast majority of people who are like, it's fine this, you know, season ticket holders that don't make any difference to. That most people who are all fine with it are going, it's fine this. Well, I'm not surprised you think that. Like, of course you don't, because it makes no difference to your
life. Wait till they come for us.
Exactly.
No, the flip side is,
you know, they came for the season, for the members' tickets, and I said nothing, for I was not a season.
But the thing I would say, literally, and this is interesting, because we talked a lot about the way last season worked, and there was more moving around the ground. And I think last season is an extreme season, by the way, if they're quoting the numbers from last season, in any front, both for season ticket holders and for members. I think last season was extreme for a variety of reasons. COVID played a massive part. There was the idea of people coming back, and there was the way in which what the structure ended up sort of encouraging. But what the one thing I can say with certainty, and this is where I think this does get it, like, for instance, Phil sits in Phil's seat, certainly more so than the one that isn't even my seat that I was in last season. Phil sits in Phil's seat, and I think that that is the thing as well, that there are season ticket holders, because what I don't want to sound like here is nobody sitting in the
my
seat.
Yeah, my season ticket's in my name, and I sit there every week.
Yeah. No, you do, so, absolutely, yeah.
Admittedly, Craig's sitting in my wife's. But,
less said about that, the better. on this public platform. as we go all the way through. Do we answer anything there?
We have fun.
Is this still Tour Live? I feel like other things have happened. I'm not quite sure where we are at this point. That was a conversation that was very much had in good faith. If you've listened to it, I hope you've listened to it in good faith as well. I don't know if we've got any answers out of all of that, but there are a hell of a lot of questions. And then I think the people who work both for Liverpool and who do work around ticket forums are also aware of the fact that there is a hell of a lot of questions around it all. It's sort of a bit our jobs to do this sort of thing from time to time. No one knows if Mateus Nunez is happening or not. Matt Smith seems to say yes. James Pearce seems to say no. He's tall. He plays
Gutman
centre-mid.
Knows who to believe.
Gutman does know who to believe. He's tall. He plays centre-mid. It looks like he can hold the ball up quite nicely. I think if someone asked about midfielders at the very start of the show, the only way I see Liverpool adding another midfielder is if one goes, but they proved me wrong before. But the manager seemed very emphatic when he spoke to me, at least in front of people on cameras, I would sort of point out. But then, you know, football managers, they get to say things that they don't necessarily believe or think all the way through. That's been Tour Live. We've covered Darwin Nunez. We've covered Mateus Nunez. It just happened then. We've had the inserts in there as well, where some people spoke to John some time ago in some instances, and there was all that then on the tickets. Sometimes a show goes this way, and they're sometimes the best ones. Take it easy. Sports Social Podcast Network.